I mean, we had a section of locked off motorway, and where we owned obviously all the vehicles on the motorway in a grid formation that we're weaving in and out of. I guess we were topside of 100 through the vehicles, and then we had a couple of crane shots where we were just doing flybys past the crane, and we were probably 130, 140 flat through there.
Hello and welcome to Cunning Stunts with myself, David Holmes. Ever since I was a teenager, I've been performing as a stuntman on feature films. And for 10 years, I was the stunt double for Harry on the Harry Potter films. Whilst preparing a stunt for the final film in the series, I suffered a spinal injury that had the effect of paralysing me from the chest down and ending my career. However, in the decades since the accident, my love of stunts, the stunt performer community and movies has never wavered. So I'm starting this podcast to highlight and pay tribute to the amazing performers who make up the stunt community, giving you first-hand accounts of the work that goes into crafting some of the mind-blowing action scenes you've seen on films such as Star Wars, Mission Impossible, and The Avengers, while also revealing the grit, talent, and bravado of those that risk their lives in the name of entertainment. One quick note, the other voice you'll hear occasionally is Dan Radcliffe, one of my best friends and acting double on the Harry Potter films. He's been sitting in on some of these interviews. Okay, welcome back to Cunning Stunts, and today you're going to hear our interview with the very talented Mr. Rick English. Rick has always enjoyed sport and comes from a background of competing in martial arts and motor racing. In his interview, he tells us how he went from becoming a personal trainer to performing stunts and how training for the stunt register was a natural progression. Rick's got a very impressive credit list, and how cool is this? One of the few men to have a fight with Batman, Bond, Jason Bourne, and Captain America. In Rick's interview, he tells us what it's like driving a sports bike at 140 mile an hour flat out on the Mission Impossible films, and what is the process of crashing a motorbike safely. Here's our interview with Rick. Hope you enjoy.
Brilliant. Thanks for joining us today. Do you mind just giving us your name and how long you've been involved in the stunt industry, please?
Yeah, my name's Rick English, and I've been doing stunts for 17 years now.
17 years?
Yeah.
Wow. And how did you get into it, Rick?
It was one of those things that I kind of thought about when I was a youngster. I think a lot of kids grew up with the same sort of programs that I did, with The Fall Guy, The A-Team, the Saturday afternoon kind of TV, Dukes of Hazzard, and all that stuff. And but it was one of those things that it was never kind of considered, a career path that was, that was, you were able to achieve. So kind of got forgotten about for a little bit. Always been sporty though, and carried on with sports and stuff through school, and was into martial arts and bikes and all that stuff when I was young. And then through the martial arts and stuff, just once I moved to London to pursue that as a personal trainer and everything, I started doing bits of fighting for films. I was working in the West End in gyms and stuff, training with actors and directors, and decided that was what I was going to pick up again, and trained, got on the stunt register.
Got on the stunt register.
And that was that, yeah.
And how long did it take you to train, Rick?
Probably 4 years solid from when I decided this is what I want to do, this is the career I want, to actually getting on, accepted on the stunt register was probably 4 years, I think.
4 years.
Yeah.
And what was the disciplines you chose?
I did martial arts, fencing, swimming, gymnastics, trampolining, and motorcycle racing.
Right, okay, cool. Yeah. And to get your motorcycling racing, do you have to be a competitor in?
Yeah,
in
it's funny, the motorcycle racing one at the time was one of the ones that was a bit more kind of subjective than the others. It was like everything else had a specific grade that you had to achieve in these different things, but the motorcycle racing, I think it said like ACU license, which is the governing body of motorcycle racing in the UK, ACU license and successful competition experience.
Okay.
So I just I was racing anyway, and I just put my stuff forward, and I think I'd done probably about 60 or 70 races by that time, and had probably 20 or 30 top tens, and you know, I got accepted with it, so it's all good.
Now, can you just give us a few of your credits, Rick, some of the films that you worked on?
Yeah, of course. I did 6 of the Harry Potter movies, yeah, from number 3 to number 8. Managed to have small part to do with some of those, and that was good times. Obviously, yep. Batman Begins, Dark Knight Rises. Did Inception again with Chris Nolan, Mission 5 and Mission 6.
Yeah, I wanted to touch about that because there was that big bike sequence, wasn't there, on the last mission?
In Morocco. That was like a dream job for me, completely.
Can you just elaborate on it for us, please?
Yeah, it was one of those things. I was approached by the stunt coordinator, who was Wade Eastwood, and asked if I wanted to come and try out with some of the guys. For a riding sequence in Mission, which was going to be a chase through the mountains, chasing Tom and stuff, all motorcycle stuff, and it was all sports bike stuff, which is pretty rare, to be honest. I mean, motorcycle chases are pretty few and far between in movies as it is, and especially one involving 6 or 7 riders and on sports bikes, you know, and I thought this is exactly, you know, what I've wanted to do. But yeah, we ended up doing that, and it was a chase through the mountains up in Morocco. And a lot of high-speed stuff that, again, you don't normally get to do.
Yeah, I mean, there's that big wide helicopter tracking shot.
Yeah.
And your guys are flat out. Absolutely. I mean, can you tell us some of the speeds that you were doing?
I mean, we had a section of locked-off motorway, and where we owned, obviously, all the vehicles on the motorway in a grid formation that we're weaving in and out of. I guess we were top side of 100 through the vehicles. And then we had a couple of crane shots, where we were just doing flybys past the crane, and we were probably 130, 140 flat through there. But I don't think it will ever happen again.
Chin on the tank, head down, flat.
Yeah, it was good. And then on the reset, we had the opposite side of the carriageway, which was completely empty. And so myself and one of the other riders, Kieran Clark, who's an ex-BSP rider, used to come the 7 kilometres back, pretty much flat in the tank, on the tank 6th gear, until we got about a mile away from unit base, and then we'd tap it off to about 30 miles an hour and coast back.
Brilliant.
Laughing. But it was really, really good times. But it was one of those jobs where you literally can't make a mistake. It was just concentration all the time when we were filming, because there was no room for mistakes on there. There were literally, you know, 1,000-foot drops on the edge of it. Yeah,
and I'm guessing Tom Cruise is pretty good on a bike as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he's actually really good.
And I mean, I've gone through the list with a few people, but you've had a fight with Batman.
Yeah,
3 fights with Batman. Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
James Bond.
Yeah. I'm glad you've been through that.
Any of the Marvel films, any of the superhero films?
Yeah, Captain America. I had a fight with Captain America.
Nice.
And stuff.
I think you might have the most complete set so far we've had.
Wow. Yeah.
The chess set of stunt fights.
Yeah, it really is.
I didn't really think about that.
Yeah. So you've got Bond, Bourne, and Batman is that's a good.
The triple threat.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that was great. Thanks for pointing that out. I might put that on my resume.
No worries. And some stunts where you felt like this could go wrong, or any moments where you felt where you've been pushed a little bit?
I think, like all of the stunt guys, you like to push yourself a little bit, you know, and if you really believe that you're capable of doing something, then it's often a case of trying to convince production and coordinator that you can do this. But I was glad I got the opportunity to do the high side crash on Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Can you just explain the high side crash? Because it's quite a technical job, and I know that if you don't clear the bike or the handlebars, very easy way to break your legs. So
yeah, it's something that can go wrong quite easily. Normally, it's what you try to avoid doing in racing. There's 2 main types of crashes whilst you're cornering in racing. Really, and it'll either be a low side or a high side. A low side is where you'll see the rear tire normally, sometimes the front tire, but usually the rear tire will just let go. You'll just break traction, usually from putting the gas on too much. The rear tire will spin up, break traction, and the bike will slide out from underneath you. Yeah. And hopefully you'll just slide along the floor after it. A high side is you initiate exactly the same. The bike will start to slide, then you shut the gas, and what happens is the rear tire then picks up traction again, but because it's probably traveling at, you know, 70, 80 miles an hour, it'll throw the back of the bike up into the air, and this is where you see these guys get catapulted into the air and front flip over the bike.
So you had to perform a high side and clear the bike all in a frame?
Yeah. Yeah, it was something I really wanted to do, and I decided to do it on the brake rather than on the gas because I thought it'd be a lot more accurate.
No wires involved.
I just literally put the bike into a sideways slide and then let the brake off, flick the bars and let it just pitch me over the top. I've done it plenty of times practicing other stuff by accident, but that's the first time I had to do it sort of full commitment onto the mark. Yeah, we were probably doing, I think, 85 kilometres an hour we were doing in the end on that one because I was keeping pace with Tom's bike.
And how many takes were you asking?
One.
Just one take wonder on that.
One take and lots of cameras is the way, the way to do something like that. But it was one of those where I thought I'd probably get some kind of minor injury from it, you know? You can't throw yourself at 50 miles an hour onto concrete and expect to come away completely unscathed. Usually just a bit of road rash or something like that. Yeah. But for me, I don't really worry about the getting hurt bit. It doesn't even enter your head. I'm sure you remember this. It's more that you're anxious that the job's going to go right and that it's going to look good and that it's going to give what people
it's
want
from
it.
Not the fear of the injury, fear of failure of not getting it
exactly,
right.
Exactly, yeah, 100%. I mean, the injury either happens or it doesn't happen. It can happen doing the simplest gag that you weren't worried about, or it can happen, you know, in fact it usually does happen during the simplest gag that you weren't worried about.
Now, could you mind just giving us the list of any of the injuries you picked up in your career, Rick?
Yeah, I've been I won't say lucky, but I've been all right, to be honest. Everybody's had injuries, but I consider most of the injuries to be like the same sort of thing you'd get if you were any kind of professional athlete or sports person. You get a lot of soft tissue injuries. I used to have a bit of a magnetic head and just ended up with everything hitting me in the head. I had black eyes constantly or stitches and stuff like that in my head. But it's all kind of minor stuff. I've had a few breaks. The first couple of years I got on the register, I broke my leg twice. It was just one of those things. One was practicing myself motorcycling, which again, you come off a motorbike so many times, every now and again you'll break something. So that was just one of those things. And then the other one was just literally jumping, I think it was on a King Arthur or something like that back in 2003, the Clive Owen one, just jumped off a set of rocks, ankle folded underneath me, snapped, and that was that. And that was two of the biggest kind of breaks that I've had in my career. And they came within 10 months of each other as well.
Yeah. But didn't you have a job on Batman with Buster? Dropped you into the car?
It was off of the roof. We were fighting on the roof. I was playing like an urban ninja thing, and he tackles me off the roof, and we fall through two other roofs and then onto the concrete. And the idea in the story is that we're kind of face to face with each other, and he's driven me off of this roof, and he's going to use me as a kind of battering ram to go through these roofs and then as a crash mat at the bottom as well. So we'd done the bits through off the roof and through the roofs, which we did on a descender, which obviously is a wire that controls your descent off of the building. We'd done that and that was all fine. And then all we had to do was the pickup of the landing. So we just did that free and just jumped off a rostrum onto the concrete. And so I was face to face with him. And I remember just before the take, we were just going to concrete, but I had a back pad on, and then the costume was quite protective as well. So I was like, this is going to be one of those where it's going to wind you, but it'll be all right, you know. Put everything on that I could. And then I just remember saying to him before the take, let's just go big and we'll only have to do this once.
Famous last one.
Yeah, so we came off the rostrum, and then as soon as I'd hit the floor, I knew I was in trouble. I was just that.
Just knocked the wind out, yeah.
Yeah, completely. But to a point where I was like, I'm in real trouble here. And he rolled off and carried on his action. They called cut, and I knew I wasn't getting up really from that one.
But, no second take on that one.
No, not getting a second take out of that one. It was all right in the end.
What had happened?
It was something that took kind of 3 months. It was kind of all soft tissue kind of thing. I didn't break anything, but it was kind of stretching the ligaments between my pelvis and my sacrum kind of thing. It all got twisted really badly, landed kind of on one side with another person's weight on top of me. Yep. And it was kind of a bit more of a point impact than it should have been, you know. I should have been able to spread the whole weight, and it kind of landed on one hip and just completely twisted me around. And but it was, I got away with it. It was
still here.
Yep, still
and
here,
and
yeah.
When you're talking about like the you know, the two breaks you got in a year,
yeah,
you know, either the first or the second one, like when you're lying there recovering from it, you know, I feel like most people a lot of people when they fall off a motorbike or throw themselves off and they break something, go, that's not that for me, I won't do that again. What is it, do you think, about you or about you guys that you go, no, I'm going straight back to that?
Yeah, I don't know. It is just part of what happens, and you get used to it with racing. There was times during racing and stuff as well where I remember sitting there in the hospital or whatever and just going, I think I'm done. I don't think. And it's not because you can't do it anymore. It was just because, you know, you've got that whole thing where you have to then ring your family and say, all right, I'm just in the hospital now and all that stuff. But to be honest, that lasts for like an hour or something and you're a bit peed off. It's normally the case that you're looking at your bike and go, oh, I've got to fix that kind of thing, more than yourself.
It's like cutting your levers off. Yeah. Never cut the levers off. Yeah, exactly. Never cut them off. They're an accident, like to keep
exactly.
the levers safe.
Really,
yeah. If you cut a rider's levers, well.
Right. I'm saving your life.
You have to wait till they're unconscious, you know, to do that, and then tell them afterwards, probably.
Since becoming a stuntman, you've become a father. Did that change any way that you evaluated work at all?
No, certainly not in the early days. I was still kind of, when my son was born, I was still in the sort of early stages of my career, and I was trying to, you know, do as much stuff as I could. And I still am really excited every time the phone rings, you know. I still love working, and I've always been like that. But especially at the start of your career, you can't really afford to turn anything down. Yeah. The industry back then wasn't quite as busy as it is now either. I mean, a lot of the stunt guys that got on the register when I got on were lucky to get 4 or 5 days work a year, you know. If you got a day on a TV show, The Bill or Casualty or something, it was great. It was a big deal, and, you know, it was brilliant. And it still is for me. I still enjoy doing everything. But at that time, I certainly didn't want to turn anything down.
Is there anything you've been really proud to be involved in? As a stunt performer? You know, stunt
what
film.
Sequences that I've looked at and thought.
Or films.
Inception was a big one for me, just because it was a good movie, not just a good action movie. I thought it was a really good movie, a really clever movie.
Did you do part of the rotating set piece?
Yeah, there was a funny thing with that. The two guys that were doing the fights were myself and Marvin Campbell, who were doing the fights with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and one of the fights was to take place in a rotating corridor, and the other fight was to take place in zero gravity. And originally I was doing the rotating corridor fight, and Marvin was doing the zero gravity fight. That was just the way they'd put us down to do it. And so we turned up there, and I actually had a torn MCL at that time from my previous job, which I told them about, and they knew about.
So, major crucial ligament on the inside of your knee.
Yeah. So medial collateral ligament. Yeah. It is, and it kind of stabilizes your knee and stops the bottom half of your leg from pushing outwards.
Right. Okay.
And so my leg was a little bit wobbly at that time. Yeah. So I'd kind of spoken to the coordinators. It was Tom Struthers and Cy Hollins were coordinating, and I'd said to them at the time, I've got this injury. I really want to come and work. It's not going to cause me a problem. I just finished the last movie for the last 2 months with the same injury, just wearing a brace. I had a custom sort of carbon titanium RoboCop leg brace thing going on. So I said, you know, if you're happy with me to wear that, then I'd love to come and do it with you. And so they were perfectly fine with that. It was just once we got into rehearsals that I just realized that the forces it was putting on my knee when I was running through the rotating corridor, it was pretty much exactly the wrong thing for me to do, try and run at the same time.
So you tried to avoid it
as the floor's getting pulled away from you all the time. And so they just said, let's just switch the fights over. You do the wire stuff and the zero gravity fight. And Marvin ended up doing the...
It's a great sequence, isn't it?
Yeah, it was good. Really it was good. It was just something completely different, you know. And we spent a lot of time trying to get it to look realistic. And we had a lot of rehearsals, and the actor did all of the fight himself as well, which is quite unusual. But he's a real athlete as well, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and he really enjoyed coming in, and we just used to play for hours, hanging upside down in that corridor for hours at a time.
So you mentioned that Joseph was really good in that sequence.
Yeah.
Is, some other actors that have been really impressive for you to work with?
I think most actors these days are more than willing to give it a go, and productions like that, because obviously they can, they've got a lot more choice of shots that they can use, where they're not having to hide stuntmen's faces and stuff. And even Colin Firth, I double Colin in the Kingsman movies, and he'd be the first person to tell you that he's not an action actor. Usually, or he hasn't been in the past, and he's not even a sports person. You know, he'll tell you himself he didn't really play sports growing up, and that he was into other more academic things and stuff. And when we first started working with him on the first movie, he was saying, "Yeah, you'll be able to do everything. You do this and you do that." And we got him to a point where he was loving it, and he pretty much did everything himself. I mean, we jumped in and out. There's obviously some stuff that that he didn't do, and it wasn't necessary for him to do, but. But he was able to perform all of the fights in Kingsman, you know, to one degree or another, and it really helped out with where we could, you know, blend the shots of myself and him.
Makes all the difference, doesn't it? If you've got someone that's willing to learn and willing to work.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you want to coordinate?
I don't know.
No, not at all.
No.
Why is that, Rick?
I don't know. I mean, I just love performing. That's I love doing the stunts. I love the technical part of it. I love the adrenaline part of it.
Have you ever turned a stunt down, Rick?
No, not for thinking I might get hurt or fear that. Only if I've thought there was somebody better to do that job, then I would always say, I think you need this guy. You know, he's a bit more of a specialist in this area and stuff.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't take a horse job, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I'd probably turn that down. In fact, I would definitely turn that down. Yeah. But I like to think that. I mean, everyone's got their own specific areas that they come from, their specific backgrounds that they come from. There's sort of general stunts, obviously, that everybody performs, with general falls and wires and fights and stuff. But then other people have got their areas of expertise, and I think it's quite important to get the right person in when it comes to that kind of job, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. And to keep yourself top of your game in performing, are you always training?
Yeah.
Always pushing the boundaries, always? I mean, you taught me how to wheelie a motorbike.
I know, I remember,
down at the wheelie school.
Yeah.
So, and you find yourself there quite often, still pushing the boundaries, still trying to find new tricks.
Yeah, and I enjoy it, you know. But the stunt riding, especially trick riding, like the wheelies, stoppers and stuff, it's something that you can see your progress in pretty much every time you ride, you know. You try a new trick, and it's like anything. It's like you would have been with the gymnastics, you know. You want an extra half twist, or you want an extra rotation or whatever, and it's something that you can then push and push and push, and you can see your progress, and you know, you end up on your backside a few times, and then slightly fewer times.
You pick me up a few times, I remember that, yeah. I wrecked the bikes on top of me.
No, you do amazingly well, actually, and there's guys that come from certain backgrounds that are able to you know, take direction, like I say, and take a bit of, you know, take the advice on board and implement it straight away, and you find that those guys pick stuff up a lot quicker. So
we had a chat just off camera about your family, and that your son is now seems to be quite eager to get to follow in his father's footsteps. Are you happy about that?
Yeah, definitely. I've always said that it's whatever he wanted to do. You know, this is all I've done since he was, you know, 1 or 2 years old. Well, since before he was born, really. So this has always known me doing, and it's been quite kind of normal to him. He'd, you know, drive past the set at Cardington and just be like, "Oh, Dad's over there working with Batman," or whatever. He was like 3 years old, going to the nursery or whatever, and it was normal, and we brought him to set and he met various people, and that was always normal to him. I wasn't sure. He'd never said he was super keen to get into it until the past couple of years. You know, when he was growing up, I always gave him every opportunity. You know, we made sure he started with gymnastics at an early age, and motorcycles, and Thai boxing, and that kind of thing. So he tried all these things out, and just
all of his qualifications already there for him anyway.
Yeah,
makes
by the
it
time
a lot
he's
cheaper
like 12.
Now, doesn't
yeah, exactly.
It?
Yeah, no, it's just a question of getting the right pieces of paper now, and all that stuff, and just really knuckling down and getting it done for the register. But he had a bike accident when he was 8, motocross accident, and broke his arm quite badly. I was riding with him at the time, and I just came around the track and saw his bike on the floor, and I thought, oh, he's tipped off again, which, you know, kids do all the time. And then I saw him sat at the side of the track holding his arm, and I went to hold it, and it was literally... So he had pins and plates and stuff in his arm at age 8, and that was pretty gutting for me, to be honest. And it's one of those where you'd ordered anything to swap places with him at that that point. But and he decided he didn't want to ride anymore. Then I said, you know, because I said to him at the time, I said, if you don't want to ride anymore, that's cool. We'll just leave it. And he said, oh, I think I'll leave it for a while. And so he left it. And then about a year later, he came back to me and said, can I get another bike? And so...
So it's built in him.
Yeah.
DNA of craziness follows him.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Sweet. Brilliant. Rick, thanks very much for coming in today. I really appreciate it. And thanks to Rick for joining us this week. What a wicked interview that was. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Cunning Stunts. We'll be back for you next week. Until then, take care. Ripple Production podcast series produced by myself, David Holmes, and Amy Stairs. Sound recording, editor, and music by Joe Lamb. To find out more about us, please visit our website, www.rippleproductions.co.uk, or follow us on Facebook and Instagram.